This is also a sport we're looking at here where you have to be gritty. You do have to push through the pain and the suffering. But the aim of every session isn't to do that. So sometimes maybe it's crappy weather and you're going slower, or it's a long run and you just have to get the miles in, but you're feeling good enough. Then you still need to ask yourself, will I get the benefit out of this? And that benefit may be more mental. It may be just being tough that day. But it's always asking yourself, what are you trying to achieve and can you do that? And in particular, is it going to be detrimental?
Welcome to the Trailhead of Trail Runner Nation, where we go on virtual trail runs with interesting guests and teach us a little bit about how to be a better runner and possibly better human beings. If this is your first time listening, we welcome you to the trail and hope you feel welcome.
Hey, today we're going to have actually four runners on this trail with us today. Scott, we're going to talk to Sally McCray, Patrick Regan, Ian Sharman, and Adam Kimball, and we're going to talk about TRN's training principles. And if you're wondering what that is, stay tuned because we're going to explain. Path projects, we've used them for years, Scott, and there's a reason.
They were created to make great gear for us runners. Right now, it's cold outside. That's a problem. And there are a lot of different companies, a lot of different clothing that you can choose from that can keep you warm while you're out putting in those winter miles.
But Path Projects not only keeps you warm, but it's very functional. It works with you. It's made for runners. And not only that, it looks great on the trail and off the trail.
It has the pockets where you need them, has lots of storage, they're warm, and they're comfortable, and they look good too, Don. These, the Killam pant, I actually wear almost every day, just in my normal walk-around day.
And they're durable. Everything that I have in my Path Projects line, I can't even tell when I've got them. They're all brand new looking.
I haven't thrown any away because of wear and tear. And you can find more if you go to pathprojects.com.
Scott, there are a lot of things that stink in this life. Inflation, COVID, the high prices of gas these days. But you know what doesn't have to stink? You and I.
And Native cares about the products that you put on your body. They're all about stopping that stink, but doing it the right way. You have a lot of choices to put on your body. Deodorants and body washes and perfumes. And sometimes you may not know what's going into those products. They could be harmful for your body. Native uses good products that are good for your body. That's the Native difference.
There's a lot of great scents to choose from. My favorite is eucalyptus and mint. Scott, did you notice a new one? Tie-dye vanilla cupcake.
You know, I'm not opposed to trying new scents. I'm actually right now using a candy cane deodorant. And I kind of like it. I was skeptical, Don, but I actually like it.
Well, you smell much better since you're using it.
And you can get 20% off your first order by using the code TRAIL if you go to nativedeo.com/trail. That's nativedeo.com/trail and use the promo code TRAIL at checkout to get 20% off.
Thanks for joining another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name is Scott Warr.
And I'm Don Freeman. And welcome to year 2022, Scott.
Hey, Happy New Year, Don.
Thanks. Today, I'm looking at TRN training principles. And we're going to be talking through some of them this year. And we've got a number on the list. And the first one we're going to talk about is quality training. And since we don't know a lot about it, we've invited four very smart people to talk to us about it.
And what is quality training? You know, we get in a rut. In fact, I was actually out on a run this morning, Don, with a friend of ours, and we're talking about the rut that we often get into of going out and doing the same route or really running the same pace and just doing that medium intensity run where it's a little bit of a workout, but it's not. And we've always been told since the very beginning of we started this podcast, we've been told by very smart people to train on the outside limits of those. Really put a lot of your effort, 80% of your effort in slow runs, and then do some high intensity training. And that all comes back to the principle of quality training, going out there with a purpose.
Yeah, not quantity, not I need to get my X miles in today, but going out there and running those X miles with a real agenda. Is it speed? Is it endurance? Is it technical training? What is it that you're working on today?
And as you know, Don, I've been working with a coach over the last year plus and learning a lot. You know, I've been doing this for a while now, and I'm learning a lot that it shouldn't always be the same, you know, mileage each workout. And each workout, if you just put a little bit of effort into hill training or a little bit of effort into some stride workouts where you're increasing the speed to a lactate threshold level, that really matters. And to have a calendar and really plan out your training makes those quality training events more powerful and hopefully more effective.
And if I'm a listener right now, I'm thinking, who would Scott War pick as a coach? Who's your coach, Scott?
David Roche. You know, we met him years ago, and I've just really liked his philosophy, and I was very lucky that he was accepting me as an athlete. And it's been really a really good experience for me because, as you know, Don, when you lived in the area, we would just go out for our normal 8-9 mile loop, same loop. We do it at the same pace. In fact, you could probably set an atomic clock to our pace on that 8 or 9 mile loop. And I'm finding now that a lot of my workouts are actually shorter than that, than 8 miles, but there is a little sprinkling of quality training components in many of those workouts.
And that's why we want to talk about it, because it's easy to get into the rut. We show up at a certain time, we run the same loop, we can predict the finish time. And it's good to be able to predict finish because we have a job to do on the other side of that workout, perhaps. But it's also good to put some spice into our workouts. And today we bring on four guests. We're going to talk to Sally McCray, Patrick Regan, Ian Sharman, and Adam Kimball and get their take. 10 minutes each is their instruction. Come with a story about how you learned this principle, and then let's talk about how you apply this principle. And I think it's going to be a great conversation.
And we picked these people specifically for this topic because in their own right, they have been very successful in their own trail racing pedigree, but they're also coaches. So they've done the research and they've also done the experience of training other athletes to perform better. Now, here on Trail Runner Nation, you know, we're not 99.9% of us are not going to make the podium, right? We're all out there setting personal records and pushing our own limits, regardless of where we are in the finish line, right? And what we're finding, or what we hope to find, is that there are some disciplined, specific quality training things that we can throw into our training efforts that can help us become the best trail runner we can be.
So with that, Scott, I think we've outlined the objectives. And this, we hope, as we're looking forward into 2022, this could be a series. You know, I've predicted series before that only had a catalog of one episode, but I think this one has a chance.
So Don, I have a question for you. There's always the argument, quality over quantity. And I want to get your opinion on that. I'm reading a book right now, Atomic Habits by James Clear. It was a book that was recommended actually by Adam Kimball. And I'm about, I don't know how far I am. I'm nine chapters into this book. And they argue for the purpose of building a habit, quantity always trumps quality. So it's more important to get out the door and get something done than focusing too much and planning too much on the quality of that effort. Because you can plan yourself into submission where you spend weeks and weeks of thinking about the quality and actually not getting anything done. So for the purpose of building a habit, quantity and getting out the door and repeating that is more important than whatever quality you have. So what's your opinion on that?
Well, I think maybe we started with principle number one, which should have been consistency. Maybe that's the first ingredient. You have to have a little consistency and then demand quality. If you start with quality, then and you're not consistent, then it's a problem. So maybe we got them out of order, but I think it's still an important one, and we should go down that path. And let's do consistency next.
So as a prerequisite of this episode, we can assume that you already have the habit of consistency in your training, that you're getting out there on a regular basis and getting it done. And now what we're doing is taking it to the next level and adding the quality component, which can make us all better and stronger. At least that's a hypothesis that we're going into this episode with.
It's kind of like starting out on chapter 3 in the book, Scott.
Our first coach and athlete that is going to talk to us today about quality training is Sally McCray. She just nailed it this year, 2021. She won the Badwater 135. If you haven't heard that episode, go back. I'll try to remember to put it in the show notes. But she was the winner of the Badwater 135. She has a new podcast that is called Choosing Strong, and she has a new training app. You can find all this at sallymcray.com.
Welcome, Sally McCray. You know, it's so nice to just drop into a coach and get a bit of their take on what quality training looks like. So, Sally, share with us your story, your relationship with quality training.
Well, it is always so good to see you guys. Thanks for having me on. I love talking about all things training. You know, I actually like to share it quite a bit on social media. And one of the things that I talk about the most is strength training. I think especially in endurance sports, running in particular, when I first broke into ultra running and then was able to make it into a career, you know, strength training wasn't something that seemed to be a very important topic, but it was something that I had always done, especially as a soccer player in college. And so I have always tended to carry a little bit more muscle than I guess what you would think of a runner to have. And I think even if we look at, you know, at just a typical runner over the years and being competitive, it isn't someone that is bulky. And so for me, I always kind of felt a little out of place with how much muscle I had. And I actually spent several years talking to different dietitians and nutritionists on, hey, can you guys help me take off some of this muscle? Can we reduce some of this muscle? And two of them were like, yeah, we're not going to work with you. That's just weird. We've never had anybody ask us that before. And one woman in particular had told me, she's like, you know what, Sally, what makes you good at your sport is your muscle. You take that away, then you're not going to be performing the same way that you are right now. So, you know, and I went through a series of different fat testing. I did like the underwater fat testing. I did the DEXA scans because I actually wanted to see, okay, how much of my training is actually strength and muscle building, and how much, you know, fat am I carrying? What is my bone density? All of that. So I got a lot of answers in there. And after doing a DEXA scan, the person running it said, you know, if you were to try and decrease your size, you would actually become weaker and sick. You wouldn't be very strong. And so for me, what I understood was like, you know what, this is just my body. Like, I love to strength train, and I really feel like the longer that we are out on the course, especially for those of you that love to do ultra running, you know, it is so much more than just being the fastest one on the start line. You have to build a body that is able to endure for the many, many hours ahead. And especially in those races that end with really big climbs. When I think of UTMB, you know, I did that race for 5 years. That race ends with three massive climbs. And over the course of 50K, you climb about 16, 17,000 feet. At the end part of the race. And it's just relentless. It's grueling. And you know what? It doesn't have to do with speed at that point. It's what can your body endure? Are your hips strong? Are your lower back strong? And so, you know, as the years went on, I then started to really embrace that. And I thought, I want to be really strong for the long haul. And I also know that strength is what keeps us from injury as well. Having worked at a sports PT for a while, I learned that most of the athletes that came in were because they had a lack of strength or a lack of mobility. And so then they would spend 12, 14 weeks getting those areas stronger and more mobile. And so, you know, that has just become a big part of my passion now. It's something I love to help people with. And it's just a part of me that I love to represent. I know that I don't look like the typical runner, but I love that I get to represent the strong runner and someone that is muscular and loves to wear the muscles.
I love that, Sally. How much can you endure and not just how fast you are? Because there's so many of us that show up to the start line that may not be the fastest, you know, in grade school, running from pole to pole. We may have not have been the fastest, but we have a chance now of being the smartest and the most ability to endure. What do you do?
Yes.
What do you do on a regular basis to practice strength training?
I'm in the gym most days of the week, but I'm a big believer in being specific to your training. Every single workout has a purpose. And so, you know, I don't just go into the gym and every single day I lift heavy. You know, I'll go into the gym and it's like, okay, today I'm focusing on my legs. And then maybe the next day it's just all core and mobility. Then the following day it's upper body. I'm really specific with how I train, but I do believe the longer that I'm in the sport and for all of us, you know, every year that goes by, our bodies break down. But the cool thing about our bodies are that we are always capable of building strength. We're always capable of building muscle. And so I'm a big believer in that. You know, if I go out into the mountains for 5, 6, 7 hours to train, I know my body's been pretty beat up. And so the gym is the place where I actually recover. I find really good recovery in the gym. I'm able to assess my body. That's where I go. You know, usually Monday through Friday, I'm there. So I wake up early in the morning and I just get like an overlook of my body. So I'll do all these dynamic stretches. I'll roll out on the foam roller and I can feel where I need to work before I go out and train that day. So if my Achilles are really tight, then I know, okay, I'm going to work on my Achilles right now. And if they don't feel good by the end of this session or when it's time to run, then I'm changing my running workout. So I am very strategic in how I approach my strength training and mobility. And I see it as, you know, really fitting perfectly into my running. It's the strength training is supposed to complement my running, not take away from it.
You know, we've all been impressed by the social media that you put out with where you're doing these workouts and it's inspiring to say the least.
Thank you.
I want you to take your athlete hat off and put your coach hat on mm-hmm. for just a minute. And coach me, Sally, because I assume that most runners that listen to the podcast are exactly like me, right? I know they're not. We get into trail running because we don't want to spend time in the gym, right? You know, we're not gym rats. We want to be out in nature. We want to be out there moving through nature. How do you coach somebody that needs to have more strength training that just doesn't find joy in going to the gym?
Yeah. And you know, that's such a great question, Scott. And I think that you're right. I would have to agree with you that most runners do not want to use any of that precious running time to then go do strength training. It's like, okay, what's the quickest thing I can do to take care of this? So what I typically say is, listen, you have to pay attention and do the details of the things that you don't enjoy in order to do what you love for the longevity of your life. And it's like that with every part of our life, right? I mean, so, you know, the careers that we have that bring home the money, not every day we love doing it, but we do it for the greater good. So it's the same thing with trail running. I know that a lot of people listening have experienced those seasons where they're injured and they can't get out for that long run with their buddies. And it's like, I know for some people it's caused like a little bit of depression because they feel like they have to take a break from something that they love so much. So I think it's all about perspective. Change your perspective of what it is. You don't have to become a CrossFitter and a bodybuilder in order to strength train. In fact, the app that I just launched, my Sally McRae strength app, the first I'd say like 10, 12 workouts don't even use weights at all. I have a category in there called running foundations. And so what I would tell you, Scott, is first, you're going to do these running foundations workouts that don't use any weights, but they will both strengthen and assess you where you're at. And most people, don't understand that side of strength training. They always just think it's the weights, but doing basic things like, can you stand on one foot and sit down on a chair and and then stand back up still on one foot. Can you do that? Really basic things that will actually help strengthen your form. And you know what? If it's the little things, if you can only commit to doing 4 or 5 exercises a day, body weight exercises, anything from donkey kicks, planks, single leg squats, anything that you're on a single leg, because that's what running is. It's just a series of, you're constantly on one leg. So the more stable, the more balanced, the more controlled you are in that position, the better your form, the less likely for injury. You don't need to spend an hour and a half in the gym. I do because I love it. And it's my job. I always have to make sure I tell people that. Like I get to spend this much time training. So for those of us that don't get to spend that much time training, if you commit to 10, 15 minutes every day of strengthening some area of your body, working on that mobilization, you will notice a change in your running in as little as like 7 days. It's pretty incredible. But yeah.
Sally McCray, thank you so much for that and inspiring us to do a little bit to so that we can go out and do the things we love longer and better, because that's really what it's about. Putting in a little work to make us stronger so we have more endurance and we can persevere all the struggles that happen out there on the trail. So preventing injury, doing well, finishing strong, great perspective on quality training. Mm. Thank you, Sally McCray.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate the time.
Before I go, where do we find your app? Because I'm interested when you talked about your app. Scott, no doubt you'll link it, right?
Sure, I will.
I'll shoot the link over to you guys, but you can find my link tree is in my Instagram bio account. I'm Yellow Runner on Instagram, and it has all my links in there. And so the first one is my app.
Nice. Congratulations on your app.
Thank you so much, you guys. Great to see you.
See you on
the trail. Happy New Year. Okay, so Don, if you're playing bingo, that's what we'll call that. We're playing bingo, quality training bingo. All right. The first spot on your bingo card is strength training. 10 to 15 minutes, you can do body weight strength training. You don't have to get a gym membership and go become a gym rat. That's what I learned from Sally McCray.
And you know, the center of that bingo card, Scott, you know, the one that everybody gets, the one with the star on it. Yeah, it's listening to this podcast. So they've already got that one. And now it's strength. What's next?
I think Patrick Regan is our next guest. He was just on the podcast. We talked about his health issues that he's having with his ferritin levels. But he's, if you don't know who Patrick Regan is, his first 100-mile race back in 2017 was Javelina 100. And he not only won that race, it was his first 100-mile attempt. Not only did he win that race, but he set a course record and then defended that title in the 2 years after. In 2019, he was also the U.S. ATF 100-mile champ and won the Brazo Bend 100 with a new course record. You can find Patrick, his coaching website at patrickreganrunning.com.
So with all that said, I think Patrick knows a little bit about quality training.
He's going to talk about quality training as it is related to disciplined recovery runs. Patrick, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, so one of the most important qualities in a good training program to me is making sure that we are able to absorb the stimulus that we are providing on a regular basis with our quality sessions. So when I usually refer to a quality session, I refer to something that's focused for a certain period of time that is specialized to the performance of your race. And that can be a session that is designed to provide half marathon to marathon stimulus for someone that's gearing up for a 50-mile race on road or trail. That could be a long tempo that is progressively faster, say starting at 50-mile race pace and progressing to marathon pace by the end for, say, an hour-long bout within a longer session that's an hour and a half with a warm-up and cool-down. But in order to absorb that stimulus and have a positive physiologic impact on the body, you need to also follow that very hard session with a day that is extremely low perceived exertion. So that, number one, we don't get injured. Number two, we don't overtrain. Number three, we are able to absorb that stimulus for a positive output later in our training cycle that will ideally result in the best race you can possibly have.
You know, I that's interesting, Patrick, because initially as I'm thinking quality training, I'm thinking the high intensity stuff or the strength training or the hill repeats or the striders or something like that. I didn't really think about quality training being these recovery runs where it's very low. I think you said low perceived effort. I really like that as a component of an overall quality training plan.
What I try to do, whether it's prescribing for myself or a client, Scott, is to add these days in at the right time within our training and periodize it in such a way that our hardest days are then supplemented for the next 24 to 48 hours with a day that is this extremely low perceived exertion. That could be as simple as going for a walk with your snowshoes, right? At 120 beats per minute with a heart rate strap on. That could be walking your dog with a 20-pound weight vest, right? That could be going for a 30-minute jog that you don't actually consider training, but you consider true active recovery. So work with your coach or an advisor to have these days in your program following your absolute hardest or your absolute longest sessions, the ones that prepare you perfectly for the race, that are ideally fall between these days that also allow you to recover following, say, that 3 or 4 hour long run you had in preparation for your 100-mile race, or following your 10x1 kilometer on the track at half marathon effort, right? You need to definitely have these disciplined recovery efforts or recovery runs, recovery cross training, so that we can absorb the stimulus and not overdo it, which tends to result in an injury or a shortened training block or you not being on the starting line at your next race.
I love all that, Patrick. And one of the things that I think back to after you said that was speaking with Phil Maffetone, who's been on here, who made this comment on the podcast that said, train like you're going to race. And so, and I've thought about that and replayed that in my mind as I'm moving slowly on a training run and think, you know what, during a race, a long race, this would be the pace that I run. Why am I beating myself up for moving at this pace? Because on a long race, this is right in the zone, right where I want to be. Maybe I need to train at where I want to run, a, you know, 30K, a 50K or 100K. And maybe I need to train at that rate and not beat myself up for moving slow.
There's value in doing sessions that are hard. But I find mm-hmm. the days that are my specific 100-mile perceived exertion long runs, where I practice proper caloric intake to be even more important than 15x1 minute hard. Ah, that's just too much gray area. We need to be more specific than that, right? And the same with recovery. My topic for today is disciplined recovery runs. Those need to be extremely easy, slower than you would go in a 24-hour race, slower than you would go, you know, hiking up your hardest climb in a hard 100-mile race, right? They need to be almost disconnected from the idea of training. And you need to be thinking about it, almost meditate on it. I like to go to a grass field and jog for 45 minutes to an hour. And not even think about anything other than, I want to dial today back to the effort I would run for a 24-hour race. And that's usually a good place for me, is if I think about a recovery run, it's about the same effort that I would run for 24 hours at.
Patrick, as you put on your coaching hat, a couple things. Number one, we know that you're good friends with Ian Sharman, so we're glad. We'll let Ian know that you brought up the weight vest because he always brings up a weight vest. So we'll let him know that you already covered the topic on weight vest.
And Ian won't have to, right? Because it's been done.
Right. The question that I have for you is, when you start working with an athlete, do you find that they are not including a recovery run in their training program? Is that something that is omitted, or are most people typically doing that?
Most of the athletes that I've worked with in the past, their kryptonite is going too hard on their recovery days. Mm-hmm. And teaching an athlete to follow this type of protocol for 2 to 4 days per week, where they're stepping back and away from their easy runs being too hard, which I find is a common trend with an athlete, myself included. Like, there have been times in the past for me where, oh yeah, I ran easy for an hour at 6:45 a mile. That's not easy, right? Like, sure, I was maybe racing 5Ks at 4:30 per mile, 4:35 per mile at that time. But recovery needs to be even easier than you perceive it, to be honest. I find that an athlete like Bernard Lagat, for example, right? He's a world-class Olympic medalist in the 1500 or 5K. He probably runs his very easy recovery days easier than 75% of the athletes I've worked with in the past. Why is that? Because he truly values the importance of recovery. And I think more athletes could tend to put their ear to the ground a little bit more and see what are the pros doing on their recovery days, right?
Patrick, we really appreciate this perspective and giving us permission to go easy and seeing the people that are on the podium are actually taking advantage of those easy days to make themselves stronger. And why not us? We should do the same thing. And so we appreciate your perspective and sharing that with us. And if we wanted to get some coaching from your group or organization, where would we go?
Yeah, now, just like we talked about on your last podcast, guys, you can go to patrickreganrunning.com where you can book both consultations and monthly coaching with me and my coaching partner, Nicole Manette.
Fantastic. Not that I didn't remember, Patrick. Just in case somebody missed that episode, right?
It'll be in the show notes too, Freeman, in case you do forget.
Good. Great. Thanks, Scott.
Thanks,
Patrick. We appreciate your input on quality training.
Of course. We'll talk to you next time.
We spoke with Patrick Regan a couple weeks back about some blood testing he did to figure out exactly what was going on with his performance. And he turned to Inside Tracker.
Inside Tracker, you may have seen in magazines, and I had seen it before. I wasn't sure what it was, whether it was a timing device or whatever, but Patrick educated us and let us know that Inside Tracker does blood work and blood analysis and coaching that can help you reach your peak performance.
He found out he was low in ferritin, which allowed him to make that adjustment. He wouldn't have known about it if it wasn't for Inside Tracker. He made the adjustment and watched his performance improve.
And not only does Inside Tracker do the analysis and give you a report, but that they take it to the next step and they help educate you on what does that report mean and then help you come up with a plan on how to make yourself better. Improve that engine within you.
And those coaches understand endurance athletes, so it's great to have specialized, specific help to solve your problems.
And we're so excited that Don and I have signed up to do a test. I have my blood draw scheduled for next week. So in the next couple weeks, we're gonna learn a little bit more about these tests and the results and the service offering that Inside Tracker offers.
As we learn more about our bodies, we'll share some things that we find out, and you may see that this is a solution for you too. So stay tuned for some results coming up.
Okay, it's bingo card time. We have Sally McCrae's bingo spot with the strength training. We have Patrick Regan's disciplined recovery runs. I think that we, you know, Don, you and I have talked to a lot of different coaches that says we need those recovery runs for a couple different reasons. One, it's good so that we don't overtrain. And number two is it gets us that just to get our legs worked out and allow, like Patrick said, the hard workout, the stress that comes from the hard workout to take effect on those slow recovery runs. So if you're playing bingo, that's a piece that you can, a spot that you can put your mark on.
And to Patrick's point, we need to condition ourselves to do the things that we do often in racing, which is just long, slow miles. And we need to practice that if we're going to do it. Practice what you're going to do.
Exactly. Our next expert that we've invited on, we've had on probably about six times maybe now, Adam Kimball. He has multiple FKTs, including the Tahoe Rim Trail supported record, which he set back in 2020. Does that still stand? Did somebody kick you out of the running, or is that still the record?
Still stands. Killian's record stood for 10 years. I'm hoping mine stands for a similar amount of time. We'll see.
Excellent. He also placed first in the Gobi March, which is a 250K race in China in 2015. He has multiple podium finishers. You can find him at adamkimble.com if you want to hire him as a coach or learn a little bit more about him. He's also the co-author of the book Chasing Twilight, a joy journal for runners. Check that out. You can find it on Amazon or any bookstore that has any brain in their body. They would have it, right?
Or you can come over to my place. It's on my nightstand right now. Thank you, Adam, for that.
Absolutely.
So Adam, as we get into quality training, the theme of this podcast is quality training. What does that mean to you?
Yeah, that's a great question, Scott. And there's a multifaceted answer to that. There's a lot of different things I think that go into it. But to me, I guess one or two ideas that I think play an important role in that are the idea of both specificity and variety. And I think sometimes when it comes to training, those things can almost seem like they're not working together in a sense. And I'll give you an example of what I mean. So when it comes to specificity, I think when you're training for something, you want to mimic what you're training for as much as you can in training. But at the same time, if you get into the habit of doing the same things over and over again, I think you're also not doing yourself any favors. So what I like to do is be as specific as possible in my training while at the same time working in a lot of different varieties. So if I'm, for example, training for a mountain ultra, I'm still going to do speed work. I'm still going to do, flat speed work, working on getting as fast as I can. I'm not going to do that all the time. If I was doing it all the time, hopefully I'd be preparing for a road marathon. But I think that to be the most well-rounded runner you can be, doing a lot of variety is a really important part of that.
Tell us a little bit about the variety. Let's get specific. You live up in Tahoe, and as we speak, Tahoe has gotten 20 feet. Is that right? 20 feet of snow over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Tell us about your variety in training this week.
So for me, that means variety means, in a situation where everything is absolutely covered in snow. It's been running on bike paths when they're clear. It's been running with spikes on, micro spikes, and running through snow. And then the thing that I do most often when it snows this much is running on snowshoes, actually. So I have snowshoes that are designed for running. And so when I want to get out for a harder workout that would mimic more of like a trail run out in the mountains when I can't actually access those trails, I put on the snowshoes and head up the mountain that way. So that's kind of the mix that I have going on at the moment.
Which snowshoe do you choose for those of us that might be in a similar situation that want some of your knowledge? What are you using?
Yeah, I wear Atlas snowshoes. They have two different kinds that I think are really good for if you're running a lot. Because certain snowshoes are great for if you're just hiking around, but if you actually want to run in them, the Atlas Run and the Atlas Race are the two best that I've come across. I actually have a pair of each. And I've run snowshoe races in them before, 5K, 10K snowshoe races up in Tahoe. And I run, it's usually like, quite a bit slower, minute or two slower per mile than if I was, running on the trails on shoes. But it's a great cross-training workout and something that's excellent to do if you are in winter conditions where you can't access the trails as frequently.
I'm not a big snowshoer, but I appreciate that comment because when I have done some backpacking with snowshoes, it always seems like my legs are spread apart like I'm carrying a duper in my pants because you have to keep your legs spread a little bit. So I'm hoping that these Atlas snowshoes work a little bit better.
They do. They work a little bit better, Scott, and definitely make you feel like you got more of the right running motion compared to some of those other ones. The first snowshoes I ever had were like huge and they were super bulky and I knew I had to get rid of them once I started running in them.
Hey, Adam, let's get back into the ideal weather conditions where we're actually running on dirt trails. How do you mix up and create variety as a coach for the people that you're coaching? What does that look like?
Yeah. So for me, my opinion on the importance of variety in effective training both relates to myself and my personal experience and that as a coach. And I've just seen, when I'm training somebody for you know, if I'm training somebody for a marathon, let's say, obviously we're going to want to do a lot of, like I said, specificity of running at marathon pace or faster on pavement. But I'm a firm believer that running hills in the mountains, running on trails can be great to mix up what you're doing and make you stronger for that pavement. So while you'll want to do more of your runs designed specifically towards what you're preparing for, I think mixing in things that just make you a stronger, more well-rounded athlete are really important as well. So whether it's running hills on trails, whether it's running flat, whether it's running at race pace or a little faster, or slow runs even. It's just, it's all about mixing in those things and making it different and mixing up the routes too. I think a lot of us can fall into that, you know, sort of pattern of this is the route that I run, let's do this. And I think there's benefits to that. You know, you can do time trials and say, okay, I've run this route faster than I've done before, or see how you measure to things you've done in the past. But at the same time, when you mix it up, it keeps things fresh. It keeps it exciting, keeps it fun. And as we've talked about before, guys, keeping things fun and full of passion is what this is all about.
I love the variety piece because you've got to keep it fresh for your mind so that you're always enthusiastic about going out there, and you stay away from injury by keeping some variety. You keep doing road over and over and over again, you're going to get some cumulative effect. But if you mix in some other things, like hills or swimming, doesn't matter, you end up still building your cardio machine, but you stay away from the repetitive cumulative stress that comes with just running over and over.
Yeah, absolutely, Don. I like to think of it like, you know, back when I was a baseball player in college, I did a lot more like upper body strength training. And you wouldn't go to the, if you're familiar with that, you wouldn't go to the gym and bench press every day all week, right? You go and you do upper body one day, you do lower body or, you know, core abs another day. So I like to think of running the same way. You, while you want to focus on what you're training for and do as much as you can to help yourself, I think a big way to help yourself is to do things that aren't exactly what you're preparing for and mix it up and strengthen yourself and also stress your body in a different way. If you're preparing for a road marathon and running pavement, that can be hard on the body, but also running up a hill on a trail can stress your body in a different way and make you strong, just not in the same way.
You know, at the top of the podcast, when Don and I introduced the topic, I mentioned this 8 to 9 mile loop that Don and I used to run over and over and over again, that we could compare it to an atomic clock by our time because we ran it at the same speed. I am going to take your advice here, Adam. And this week, I am going to run that same loop clockwise.
Yeah.
Because normally we run it counterclockwise. Don, have you ever run that loop counterclockwise?
Only when I tried to find you, because I showed up late.
You're coming back to get me. The only time Don ran it clockwise is when he lost me and dropped me and had to go back and get me.
That's not the story I told, Scott. I showed up late, and then I tried to find you, but I like your version best.
Hey, guys, I got to tell you this, too. This is to that point. When I was preparing for the Tahoe Rim Trail FKT last July, I was running on a whole bunch of, I was running on the TRT a bunch, but then I was also running in this other area close to the TRT that connects to the TRT. It's called Burton Creek in Taos City. And my mentality throughout that whole like 3-4 month lead up to July 2020 was take the trail that you haven't taken before. So I'd come to an intersection and I knew this, the route really well, but then I'd always see, okay, here's a trail that cuts in. I don't know where that goes. And I'd say, I'll figure it out later. But during that 3 to 4 month block, I decided I was going to take every single one of those. And in hindsight, I really think that made that buildup just really fun. And I had a really good time. And then my body got strong, but it was also like mentally a nice release of having like a fun, playful period of training. And I honestly think that had a big impact on how I performed when I went after the FKT.
That's a great point. I love that you picked this part of quality training, the variety piece, because you got to make it fun. If it's the same thing over and over, you get bored. You may actually be demotivated to get out there and get the consistency that you need. Change it. And I really like the idea of take the trail you haven't taken before. There's a lot of trails out there. And one of the things that I found very fun. And when Don and I go out with another group of guys, sometimes is they'll take us on just crazy routes in the area that I train every day. And I'm going, wait, I didn't know this trail was here. Of course I saw the trail, but I've never taken it before. And now I take it. I mean, one of the cool things we saw the other day when Don and I were running with them is I think they called it the couch. Is that what he called it, Don? Somebody down at the bottom of the river had created this bushcraft little structure that if you got he called it the doghouse. But it's this nice little structure that I had no idea even existed down in the river bottoms that somebody had used their bushcrafting skills to create. And now if I am in the doghouse, I have a shelter I can go to.
And it's available on Airbnb. You can find it.
Lots of 5-star reviews, if I remember correctly.
Exactly. And the rate is very affordable. Adam Kimball, thank you so much. We love that you came on this episode and shared your wisdom. Again, adamkimball.com. Go check him out and go get that training log that he has, Chasing Twilight, a Joy Journal for Runners, and keep track of the variety. Yeah. And you go back and review it and see if you're doing the same type of things and mix it up. So I think that's a great way to connect those two dots.
Yeah, guys, one last thing as it relates to that. I found for myself that a lot of times when I go out on a run, something profound will happen to me in terms of like something I'm thinking about. And the more that I record that, the more valuable it is, because if it happens in the moment, you're like, oh, that's amazing. And then a lot of times for me, a day later, I forgot what I was thinking about. But when I write it down and then I can reflect on it later and then use it to propel me forward in the future as well. So just another benefit to doing something like that.
Adam, that's such a great, great topic and worthy of its own podcast. The ability to solve the world's problems or your problems during a run, how they just come down because all the other distractions are gone and you have the ability and the insight and the wisdom and the ability to solve these problems. I just love that.
Absolutely, Don. So yeah, if we don't record them, then we're never going to solve those world's problems, you know?
Yeah. Good point. Good point. All right. If you're playing along with our TRN bingo card, you can take that stamp and put it on the bingo card under the variety tab. Hopefully you're very close to a bingo because we have one more guest, and that is Ian Sharman. He's been a longtime guest and friend of ours, and he has over 200 ultras and marathons under his belt, and he's won over 50 of those races.
Wow.
He is the record holder for the Grand Slam of Ultras. He's a 4-time Leadville 100 champion, and he's a 10-time. You're going to have to fix this, Don, because I don't know whether it's right. Maybe we need Ian to verify this. 10-time Western States finisher, 9 times he finished in the top 10. And if you take all 10 of those finish times and add them together, he has the fastest cumulative time of anyone that's ever run Western States.
Scott, that sounds like you've gone down the rabbit hole with AJW in all of the and all the stats from Western States.
Well, I hope I'm right. If not, I'm sure someone will correct us. You can find Ian Sharman at all of the social media channels at Sharminian, or at Sharman Ian. Or you can find his coaching at SharmanUltras.com. Now get this. I don't know how Ian bribed or threatened people, but these are some of the coaches at Sharman Ultras: Ellie Greenwood, Sean Meisner, Magda Boulay, Dr. Matt Lay, Addie Bracey, and Stephanie Howe. All of those people coach for Sharman Ultras. So if you're looking for a coach, there's a good way to start.
And they all have a specialty. And one of the things that he does over there is find your spot that you need help, and he brings the right coach in. And so whether it's just nutrition or endurance or specific training techniques, he's got the right person.
So Ian Sharman now joins us. And Ian, what does quality training look like to you?
Well, there's a lot of elements to that. But the one in particular I want to talk about is understanding what you're aiming for every run. So basically having a purpose behind every single run that you do. And that doesn't mean being some kind of robot and saying, well, this run must be at 152 beats per minute and this other one has to be 131. And it just means knowing why you're going out there. So rather than just aimlessly doing kind of a medium effort the whole time or picking a random number for your mileage target or something like that, it's having a reason behind the run. What are you trying to get out of it? Because you don't get improvements in running just from doing a hard session and then you're fitter at the end. You get fitter because you've created a stimulus. And then at the end of that, you've got to recover from it in the following days. So when the more you can understand that, the better the likelihood that you then make your hard sessions hard enough and that you make your easy sessions easy enough to recover from that. I know that's got a lot of overlap with what a lot of the other guys have been saying.
No, you know, one of the things that I would ask you right after that, if we were running on a trail, I would say, Ian, so are you telling me that I can make more gains by going easy than consecutively pushing myself to my limit?
Definitely. I'll give you two really good examples of this, one of them being me personally. The first was a friend of mine when I lived in London about 15 years ago, and she's a very good runner. She's about a 37, 38 minute 10K runner, and she just did every run hard. So she thought, I'll get more benefit. If I run at a 6:30 pace, that's better than a 7 because it's a bigger stimulus. That must be better. And after a while, she kept getting injuries and she didn't really quite understand why she wasn't improving. In fact, she was getting slower. And then she spoke to some other people about it, did a bit of research, started throwing in some easy days and took leaps and bounds of improvements there. Plus, she stopped getting injured as well. So that's a fairly common thing. I think most people would assume maybe it's not that every day is super hard, but maybe it's that you go out for your easy day and it gets a little bit harder and suddenly it's crept up into a medium or a medium hard intensity, especially since a lot of people have a kind of comfort zone. So if we think of an 8 minute mile runner, let's say they do most of their runs at that pace on the road, slower on the trail. Maybe they do 7:30s in their speed work and 8:30s in their easy runs. But because of the fact that they're not providing much variety in that, they can't really push super hard on the hard days. So then the purpose of those days to provide a stimulus for speed and to push themselves to the edge of what they can do is going to be hindered by the fact that they're too tired to do that. And then equally, their recovery is not going to be as good. So even when they do get a good workout, they're not going to get as much benefit from it because they're going too hard on those easy days as well. And then the other example, as I said about myself, was when I first got into this, I loved doing a lot of experimenting on myself. I think I did 100 marathons within 4 years and 2 months of my first marathon. So 25 a year for 4 years. So I was doing quite a lot, but also I was completely new to it. It wasn't like I'd done college running or anything like that. I started running and then did my first marathon 6 months later. And then 4 years after that was the 100th one. But what I didn't realize is that it kind of falling into that fallacy of, well, if my easy day is just a little bit faster, that's got to be better than not doing it. So every increment faster must be an improvement. But then I spoke to Bruce Fordyce, the Comrades 9 times winner, used to hold the 50-mile world record until Jim Walmsley recently broke it. So he won Comrades all through the 1980s. He was 100K world champion, although it wasn't called a world championship at that point, but he won it anyway. So, you know, incredibly fast runner. I think he's a 217 marathoner. And when I spoke to him, I was a 252 marathoner. So pretty big difference in skill levels there. And I heard from him that he was saying his easy days, that when he'd jog and do an easy recovery run, he was running about an 8 minute mile pace. And I thought, wait a minute, that's what I do. And you're a lot quicker than I am. And you had years of success. You were at the absolute top of the sport. You were kind of unbeatable. And that just told me that maybe I should learn a bit from him and take it a little bit easier on those days. So it did take a couple of weeks for me to really hold myself back. And running a 10-minute mile felt super unnatural. Like I'd try doing it and 30 seconds later, I'd be back to that 8-minute mile pace again. Like the example I was just saying, that you kind of have a comfort zone of what you're used to. And if you stray too far away from that, either too fast or too easy, you're kind of going to come back to it a little bit because it just feels more normal and it's what you do for the majority of your running. So I had to hold myself back a lot. Started doing 10-minute miles, 9-minute miles for my easy stuff. And in a 2-year period, after basically 1 year of my marathon time not getting improved, the only change I made was this. 2 years later, I'd gone from 252 to 232. Wow. So I was totally stagnating and I thought, well, maybe this is the best I ever get. And then in a short amount of time, just with going easier on the easy days and understanding the purpose of them was to get some active recovery, to allow me to benefit from the hard days, I saw massive gains. So I see that with all the runs I coach as well. So it just gets reinforced pretty much every time I speak to someone and slow them down a little bit on their easy days.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like it's very difficult to have a hard day unless you have a few easy days in front of them. it's very tough to push that limit unless you've given yourself a chance to recover enough to achieve that pace.
Yeah, and the easiest way someone can think about that is tapering for a race. If you want to race that at your maximum and not be held back because you're too tired, you taper. So you have a little bit of tapering before a hard session. It doesn't need to be a few days. It'll vary. You know, a 70-year-old runner might be different to a 20-year-old runner, but just getting to a sense of what works for you. And the simplest way I would describe to people of how to do your hard days hard enough and easy days easy enough is just see how it's feeling over time. Vary things a little bit, go a bit easier here or there, allow an extra recovery day, and see how that improves how fast you run on the fast days. But a link to that as well is people sometimes measure their fitness by how fast they go on the easy days. That's irrelevant. It doesn't really matter if you go a little bit faster or a little bit slower, as long as it feels easy. Your real benchmark is, are you getting quicker on your speed sessions? That's how you can tell that you're improving, because that's when you're actually trying.
Boy, Ian, I love that. Taper for your hard workouts. I never really thought of it that way. I mean, looking to taper for a race, yeah, that's a natural. We've been brought up that way. But I've never really thought about creating your week, your workout week, whatever it's 7 days or 10 days or 15, whatever you break your workout up, to taper for your hard workout. That's a great perspective.
And it's a small amount. It doesn't mean that you're doing 4 days easy before a workout and mm-hmm. you're not trying to do the workout at a maximum race intensity. Mm-hmm. But it's just knowing that you want to be fresh enough going into it that you can achieve the original purpose. So the other bit of kind of the key point I want to make about having a purpose behind every run is not only knowing what that is in advance, but also adapting it on the day. So let's say you haven't recovered well enough from your last hard session. You start doing your speed work and you're thinking, why am I going 30 seconds a mile slower? This just feels really hard today, or my legs are dead. Then are you actually going to achieve the purpose of that run? If you need to feel good enough to push your body near its limits, then maybe it makes more sense to say, today, I'm just not quite ready for this. Let's dial it back a little bit and make this a recovery day with the aim of feeling better tomorrow instead.
Ian, I just want to talk about that, the permission to make adjustments on the fly. I mean, that's really cool. Speak to us about that, because I don't even know the question to ask, but I know there's something there. So share us about that, making adjustments on the fly.
Well, there's kind of two elements to that. One of them is some people will always look for an excuse to do less. That's the kind of people who often are missing a lot of runs. They always hold back too much in races. And to be honest, they're not usually quite as committed to running. So most people are the other side of it, where they're trying to do too much mileage. They're trying to get too much benefit out of everything. And so there's those kind of people who really don't like the idea of shortening a run or turning a speed session into an easy day, because they feel like they're not checking the box for that day. It's that type A personality that is kind of an essential element of every runner. If you want to fit in, day out training for years, you need to be a little bit type A. But you also need to be aware of when that might be holding you back. So that ability to be really honest with yourself and say, today I'm not going to do a good quality speed session. It would make more sense to do it tomorrow and to see how much better I can feel by then. And I'll give you another example of when I backed off to feel a lot better. This was years ago, and I had two marathons in 2 days. The first one I was going to be pacing the 3-hour group at the Santa Barbara Marathon. And the next day I was racing the Malibu Marathon. And so I wanted to feel pretty good. I had to run reasonably quick both days, and ideally very quick the second day. And on the Friday, so this was a Saturday-Sunday combination, the Friday, I felt like crap. I went for a jog at a 10-minute mile pace and thought, I feel horrible. How am I going to do these 2 days? So the purpose of the Friday wasn't to get some miles in. It wasn't to go at a certain pace. It was to feel as good as I could for the weekend that was the priority. So during that, I just turned it into a walk. After a mile, I said, I've got to do everything I can to feel better than this. Mm. And amazingly, even just with 1 day of making that adjustment, no problem pacing the group on the Saturday. And I ran, I think, for fourth place in the Malibu Marathon on the Sunday. If I'd have instead been a bit too obsessed and said, well, it's a recovery run, so I've got to run every step and I've got to do at least X minutes per mile, I probably would have ruined the whole weekend. And when you look back at it, it's really obvious that who cares about the Friday jog? What you care about is the race at the weekend. But in the minute, it's very easy to be thinking, well, I kind of should push a bit harder, because if I'm not able to do it today, then how would I possibly be able to do something harder tomorrow? But the point is that you've actually got to adjust things so that you can get back to feeling as you should.
I love the spin or the perspective of your topic, which is have a purpose, how it's taken. I didn't think it was going this direction at all. If I was to write a thesis of what you were going to talk about, this is not what I would have written. But I love the idea of having a purpose before you go out, but then also giving yourself permission to have a purpose and make an adjustment on the fly and say, no, the purpose of today's run is to take it easy and feel the best I can because I have, you know, this other goal, this more important goal, what's in your case, Saturday and Sunday marathon. I love that whole idea. Thank you.
But it doesn't mean that you change it just for the sake of it. It means you're asking yourself in the middle of the run as well, is it still feasible to do what I was aiming for in the first place? So that's the key question. So you know what you're aiming for at the beginning, and then in the middle of it, you say, is this still working? Or am I, if you're close to it, you know, you're running 5 seconds a mile slower, who cares? Close enough, you're never going to feel perfect every day. But if you're clearly feeling a lot different, you want to adapt rather than just sticking at it to be gritty or to be thinking that, well, it must be better to grind it out anyway. But then you might dig yourself into a hole because the next run, you might feel even worse. And then because of that, you push even harder and you start getting overtrained at that point.
One of the other things that I have found recently about finding a purpose or having a specific purpose for every run is it allows you to anticipate that run. So tomorrow's run, I have a purpose for that. This is what I'm going to be doing, where I'm going to be doing it, and what time I'm going to be doing it. And it gives you the anticipation and it gives you more of a reason to not back out. So if you didn't have a purpose, it'd be very easy to wake up and go, I just don't feel good today. But if you're anticipating it the night before saying, this is what I'm going to be doing, where I'm going to do it, and what time I'm going to be doing it, then when you wake up, it's almost like it overshadows any excuse that you have to go do that workout.
Well, I think that word excuse is the other key thing here, that if you find that you are constantly backing off, well, firstly, maybe it means you're massively overtrained and you're just feeling like crap the whole time. So maybe you need a blood test or something. So you should at least do a sense check on that. But this is also a sport we're looking at here where you have to be gritty. You do have to push through the pain and the suffering. But the aim of every session isn't to do that. So sometimes maybe it's crappy weather and you're going slower or it's a long run and you just have to get the miles in, but you're feeling good enough. Then you still need to ask yourself, will I get the benefit out of this? And that benefit may be more mental. It may be just being tough that day. But it's always asking yourself, what are you trying to achieve and can you do that? And in particular, is it going to be detrimental? Like that Friday run before the races I had, where it would have been detrimental just to do it for the sake of being tough. That would have been a stupid outlook on that particular day.
Ian, I have a question for you. How do you differentiate between mental weakness and physical fatigue? Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I totally get that. I mean, I'd say it's more about trends. So if you find that you're always backing off, maybe you need to be a bit tougher. So I certainly have some people I coach who I need to just say, you know what, just do the session anyway. I know the last three times you've backed off, but let's just see how it feels if you go for it. And then you can understand sometimes that maybe they're every tiny sign of imperfection, they're wanting to back off. But that's the fine line here, that you do want to get good mental training. And backing off too often, or when you don't need to, is bad mental training. That'll lead to DNFs. That'll lead to never having hard sessions because you always back off on them. So if you find that you're someone who tends to back off a lot, then maybe just every now and then, make sure you push through it and see how that feels. See how you feel in the days afterwards. But it's very much a case-by-case situation there, that some people will just never back off. You know, they can break their leg and they're still going to do a speed session. And other people, if they have the tiniest sniffle and it's a tiny bit of wind, they think, oh, I can't do my speed session today. Not even worth trying it. So the rule of thumb I always have is always be willing to start it, because you don't know how you'll feel once you get going, even if you feel tired before. But then once you get going, if you can tell it's not near where it should be, that would be when it makes sense to try and focus on recovery and make that the new purpose instead.
You know, I'm going to say this one little comment, Ian, because it maybe it'll help somebody. I feel the weakest before I start the run. Where I have that the capability of possibly backing out and not doing whatever the workout is or whatever purpose that workout has, it's always before I start running. And once I start running, it always ends up being successful.
Yeah, and that's why you should always start it. I mean, unless you're feeling ill or you can tell that you're obviously, like, your legs are so sore that you can barely stand up, then it's not going to make much sense to give a speed session a go. But in any other case where maybe you just feel a bit tired or you had a stressful day, there's no harm in starting it. And then often you'll find it feels good. And at the very least, maybe you would have done nothing because you were demoralized, you couldn't go hard. And at least that way you can turn it into a run that's easier and hopefully feel better the next day. And also from that type A side of things, check off the fact you've done something rather than nothing.
Ian, I think that's good. I think you shouldn't make the decision in your car seat at the trailhead. You should make it, you know, a mile down the trail. Make that your decision. Give yourself permission to say, you know what, at that turn, I will decide then whether I should not go or go. Not inside the comfortable car with a heater on or air conditioner, listen to your favorite tune or podcast.
Completely agree. And the one other thing I would say is having a purpose behind runs. Sometimes that purpose is just go out and de-stress. Sometimes just have fun. That is a valid purpose. But if we're talking purely about trying to train and get fitter, then everything else I've said makes sense. But you do also want it to be fun. So if you find that trying to be too precise and trying to be too good at training, you're just not enjoying it, then that's also a warning sign that you probably need to make a change, because you're not going to stick to the overall gains and be able to get consistency unless it's generally kind of fun. You know, not every run. There's definitely going to be some days you've got to stick it out where you don't want to, but you maybe feel just good enough to get the workout in. But you do want fun to be one of the aims of runs as well. Just not
love it.
Only one, I would say.
Ian, do you wear a watch when you run?
I do always, yeah. But I don't always look at it though.
Do you wear a weight vest every time you run?
I have only ever done one run in a weight vest ever. I only ever walk in the weight vest because I'm not trying to do a race where I'm carrying 50 pounds or something. Otherwise, I would train in a weight vest to run.
If that joke wasn't funny to you, you haven't listened to enough episodes with Ian Sharman, because he is a huge advocate of weight vests and he always brings it up. So I'm giving him a little bit of a hard time there. But
in fairness, I did say to you right before we started recording that I just finished doing a weight vest hike.
You did. I don't need to do a weight vest hike because I have a personal onboard weight vest, Ian.
I've got a little bit more in the last month or so, given it's the end of the year now, yeah.
And it might bring you comfort, Ian, to know that Patrick Regan referenced a weight belt a few moments before you came on. So your advice to use weight belts is moving throughout the community. So well done.
Pat has worryingly been listening to me probably too much, so much so I've started coaching him now. So he's actually into weight vests more than I am, if you can believe that. Like, he does it more frequently than me.
Wow. Hey, Ian, thank you very much for wrapping this episode of Trail Runner Nation up, talking about quality training. I think that you kind of summed up a lot of the different components from all these other great experts that we've had on the podcast. Thank you very much. Congratulations, you have made it to the end of the podcast. And this is a time when we give a heartfelt thanks to the people that support this podcast.
And we'd like to thank our Patreon members. We appreciate all your contributions. And if you would like to become a Patreon member, you can go to the Patreon page and search for Trail Runner Nation.
You can also go to our webpage and hit the support tab at the top of the screen. And you can also go to our webpage and hit the support button at the top of the page. We want to give a special shout out and thanks to Doug Crumley. He is a business Patreon supporter. Doug Crumley is a private wealth advisor with Crumley and Associates, which is a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, LLC. He's like a good coach. When you have the right financial advisor, life can be brilliant. You can find out more by going to DougCrumleyJr.com.
We'd like to thank our producer and editor, Ryan War.
Our social media expert, Yana Gibalova.
And we'd like to thank Kyle Richardson, who composed and performed our theme music.